Welcome to Flashpoint, the podcast for filthy casuals by filthy casuals.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Flashpoint episode 89, recorded Sunday, November 16th. I'm your host, David Holloway, and with me is a co-host as always, who this week, or yesterday actually, personally brokered the G20 communique. How are you, Simon?
Good. I didn't actually know that you could buy a G20. I thought you could only get a G5. We're talking about something different.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Well, I was about to say, which world leader did you enjoy meeting the most?
Angela Merkel. She's a good lay after a couple of brews.
She did impress a lot of Brisbaneites with her pub crawl. And also, besides the wonderful Simon, we have a special guest this week. Someone, I think it's fair to say, well, I think he alluded to it in a conversation, that he's been a long, long time listener right back to the bad old days. Mr. David Carr, how are you, sir?
Very good, thank you.
So, yeah, thanks for coming in. And so David's going to add some much needed substance to the podcast this week, and we appreciate it.
I'll try.
And speaking of substance, apologies for the week delay. Gail, if you're listening, you'll enjoy this fact that because I stupidly upgraded to the latest OS 10 operating system, Yosemite, it killed my audio interface. So I've had to do some workarounds, and it should all be working beautifully now. So apologies for the delay. It's all my fault. And most disappointingly, it's now coincided doing this one with what has been a big game launch week. So we've all been pulled away from our games, but at least we'll have plenty to talk about. Speaking of which, so we're obviously talking about Shadows of Revan because it's coming up soon. We are going to do a bit of time on Warlords of Draenor, given that it launched all of 3 days ago, and a bunch of other launches and other interesting stuff. So, as always, though, let's jump into our MMO news section, Republic News.
You're not afraid? You will be.
You will be.
Let's start out, well, I suppose, with what we've been playing. Simon, what have you been playing the last 3 weeks?
Oh, what have I not been playing? Actually, it's starting to get a bit out of hand. I have been flying my futuristic spaceship around, shooting enemies.
Star Citizen?
No. No.
Oh, because it's not at the stage you've been out of.
No, it is. Arena Command is actually a lot of fun, and I've found the racing module extremely enjoyable, a lot more than I thought I would. Granted, I'm not actually racing anyone. I'm just going round and round and round and round, but it's so beautiful, and it flies so well, and I've actually got my poor old Logitech joystick out, which I cannot tell you how many times that's nearly gone out as hard rubbish, until I realized that despite the fact it's ancient, it's still the current model.
Okay. Yeah, that's bizarre. They don't update that stuff that often, do they?
No. Well, and why would they? It still works perfectly fine. So that was fun. No, the spaceship shooting enemy game I've been playing is the recently re-released through Good Old Games, TIE Fighter.
Oh, okay, cool.
And wow, even though it's so damn pixelated, you don't care. So, yeah, 1080p can go screw its mother. You don't need it. You just need a fun game. So there was that. And, of course, in the same vein, I've been banging around over the last day or two with the latest FPS space shooter, which, again, is supposed to be a misleading statement. I'm, of course, referring to Halo, but then I have actually had another crack with Destiny again. So,
oh, cool.
So, yes. And because I decided I am boycotting Activision until they release a version of Destiny with a story, I ended up cancelling my pre-order for Advanced Warfare. But luckily, we have someone who can talk about Advanced Warfare with some authority anyway. But I have instead spent about, I think I've spent about $25 maybe, buying all three Far Cry games. So that's the original two, three, both Just Cause games, because Just Cause 3 is an imminent release, and Shadow Warrior, which when you think about it, is nuts. That's crazy value. So, yes, my Steam library is just getting ridiculous. I have too many games.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been playing.
Nice. And David, what have you been up to?
Mainly been playing a bit of Star Wars, joined a new raid team. We're gearing up for when 3.0 hits to hit the new content stuff in that. Eve, I've sort of got heavily into that thanks to Chris and one of the other guys. Occasionally see her log in. I'm guessing she's just sitting in her Q skill and then logs out again, but basically being into what they call incursions in that. It's, I guess you could call it raiding in EVE. You're shooting PvE stuff and fleet up with about 39 other people, so that's quite fun. Tad bit of Destiny, Diablo 3. I was actually playing that just before, and I got myself COD Advanced Warfare on PC.
Nice.
Story-wise, was pretty cool. You got Kevin Spacey as the lead actor in there, so that was pretty cool. But the story ended up, you could see where it was going to go. It was pretty predictable. Haven't actually got into any multiplayer yet. I've played multiplayer on quite a lot of the other COD games, Black Ops, Black Ops 2, and that, but just haven't really worried about it. But I must admit, did like the story in that, so it was quite fun. I'm actually looking forward to was it GTA 5 on the PS4 coming out in this week, actually.
That's 18th. Beautiful, isn't it?
First-person view. Awesome. Have you seen the video of that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That looks pretty awesome. So, yeah, that's I think what's that? That's the 18th, so Tuesday. That will be coming out, so looking forward to that. So I'll get a couple of days gaming before I head off over east for a gaming meetup.
Cool.
Very nice. And as far as what I've been playing, I have to admit, zero Star Wars The Old Republic, decent amount of Destiny in that I finally hit level 20 and I'm about halfway to 21, you know, chasing that light gear. But I'm a bit like you, Simon. I'm getting to the stage now that without the story, just doing the strikes and the raids is getting a little bit tedious. I can see my level of involvement in that game will be dropping off. And yeah, a bogload of WoW. That's really what it has been for me. And we'll obviously talk about that in a little while.
I think with that Destiny's part, if you've got other friends, it can be quite fun. But if you haven't made many friends to sort of team up with, I think, yeah, it does get a bit boring. I sort of had the same as you. It's quite fun to do a couple of strikes, but there's nothing to keep you in game at the moment.
No. Yeah, I mean, the only thing keeping me going is I'm an achievement junkie and I'm enjoying that part of it. But beyond that, I mean, it's, you know, I like it, but it's, yeah, WoW's winning out at the moment. Well, let's talk, before we get into WoW, though, let's talk Shadows of Revan. So there's a couple of things there. Number one, the Las Vegas Cantina flash drive. Simon, did you want to give us a little bit of a tour through that?
First of all, I'll just mention that if you didn't attend or listen to the stream and you want to read something about it, head on over to Pretty Little Sith. That's Heather's blog. She's got a pretty impressively comprehensive review of that. I think that it's well worth a look if you feel like it. Really, all that's left is just to kind of go over the thumb drive.
Yeah,
that's and right. I have to admit, there's not an awful lot on there.
And a lot of screenshots, which are cool, but
The screenshots are good. I'm a little peeved that the artwork for the armor set and the mount are labeled as concept. Don't show me no concept bullshit. I want to see the stuff. So because that is the first mount I've seen in a long time that I'm actually fairly keen to get.
That almost looks like a mount that you could sort of get in real life with some of the stuff that they're bringing out.
Yeah, which I don't really mind. It also looks like it'd be awfully good for trimming the verges, and that's not a that's not a euphemism, by the way. But yeah, the screenshots look good.
But you're right, concept at this late stage, given how close we are to release.
That's the thing that got me. Concept and releasing in less than a month now.
Yeah, that's right.
yeah, no concept. That day, that ship has sailed, my friends. That day is gone. Let's start seeing some hard data. But yeah, it's well worth having a look. The screenshots are worth having a look at. The Musashi Temple is looking pretty sweet. Assuming that's not more concept art, of course. And the wallpaper with the Musashi warrior, that's also worth having a good look at. The art assets are looking pretty impressive. Yeah. I'm really hoping the story is going to be equally impressive, because there's a lot of heart tangled up in Revan, and BioWare must realize that, I'm sure. So there's going to be people who aren't going to be happy. I really hope I'm not one of them, but time will tell. And also, just on the subject of cantinas, a shout out to our friends over at Utinicast, who had the first annual, and that's the label I'm giving it, the first annual Utini Cantina in Las Vegas. And have a look at that live stream if you haven't. Well, not the live stream, the recording of the stream. It's well worth it, if only just to see everyone sliding slowly into a sea of intoxication. That said, I'm pretty sure they're still ended up more sober than some of the devs do at the official cantinas. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So well done, guys. It looked like it was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Jealous we couldn't be there. But we need to have. Anyway, we won't even start on by wherever doing a cantina down here.
Let's not.
No, just get sad.
We can dream.
We can dream. So, and I mean, as you'd expect in this stage of the cycle with new release only a month off, there's not a hell of a lot more news. I'll be the first to admit, unless either of you guys, I know there's been a couple of live streams about, I think it was about classes, wasn't Inquisitor and Consular changes, and there are a couple of other things, but I'll be honest and say I haven't listened to them, so I don't see a lot of point in covering them.
No. It's good to see them actually actively engaging with the community a bit more. That's something that's, I think, most people would agree has been a little lacking recently. So it's just good to see them doing it. I'm not sure how often they play the game, judging from some of the reports of demonstrated expertise, but I can't talk.
I was about to say, we might get a job.
Well, yes, we could indeed. that's why I have to admit any changes to the skill tree, well, the skill tree is being removed.
Yeah.
It's probably really not going to replace me, partly because I have a tendency to forget my rotations anyway, and also because I keep flitting from one class to another. So
you're not maxing your skill tree yet anyway.
Well, there's that, and the fact every time I jump to one of the alts, I've got to remember how the hell I played them in the first place. The smart thing to do with this sort of thing is have it set up so comparable attacks or buffs and whatever are all in the same places right across the board. Yeah. Sort of done that on a couple, but my God, that's a lot of writing down of stuff.
It is, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the simplified skills. I must admit, I'm in very much in that camp. So, yeah, I mean, as I said, slow week. We'll have a lot more. Actually, next episode will be getting, I won't be launched by then, but we'll have probably a little bit more to talk about. So let's jump across to Warlords of Draenor. So obviously neither of you guys have played since Thursday.
Nope.
I don't play WoW at all. Absolutely. I have avoided that.
Yep, fair enough. Dutifully toddled in, and because I'm a bit old school and I've got all the other boxes, I'd actually pre-ordered from EB Games the box, toodled in and got that on the Thursday morning. Servers were due to go live at 7 o'clock Thursday night. I was originally going to go for a server first for fishing until I realised, and thanks to Chris for reminding me, I'd read it somewhere that there are no server first for this launch anyway. But I was logged in about 20 to 7, and they actually put the servers live 15 minutes early, so which was a bit of a surprise. And then the chaos started. So, I mean, you guys have played with, you know, either WoW or other expansion just launched. It's absolute chaos. It's not the ideal time to be playing. It was just madness.
Yeah, I still have vivid memories of being lost, literally lost in a sea of Worgen.
Yes.
So, yes, I know what that's like.
Oh, particularly what they had for the initial quest was Khadgar standing in the middle of, because I'm Alliance, standing in the middle of Stormwind, and there was just this enormous clump of toons, and you couldn't even see Khadgar. And, you know, people, everyone on their mounts, and it was just ridiculous.
Yes, so anyone who wants to be nitpicky, when I said literally a sea of Worgen, I did actually mean that literally.
Yes.
It were a small sea, I grant you, but it was still pretty oceanic.
Oh, yes.
So
we're all about oceanic here.
We are.
So I'm going to split into two issues. Number one was obviously the performance of the game in these first 3 days, and it's fairly unsurprising but still a bit disappointing about how poorly Blizzard have coped with the influx. So the short answer is there's been two, one 6-hour and I think one was longer, maintenances because servers were falling over. The European servers have copped it the worst. They've basically been unworkable for a lot of people the whole time since launch. Massive queues, which is not that unusual, but there's a lot of griping about, look, you guys are 10 years into this game. You know how many copies you've sold. You know how many servers you've got. Why has this been allowed to happen? So the maintenance last night was to install extra hardware.
I'm really surprised. Yeah.
What was that? Sorry, David?
A bit late.
Yeah, a bit late. And I mean, it's just pathetic. So on that side, it hasn't been good. I logged in this afternoon at about 4:30, and it was 3 hours nearly on the dot that I was able to get in. So there are about 3,500 people in the queue, and that's just on one of the local Nagran server. People on the higher population servers are reporting even worse, 3, 4, 5 hours. So I've queued for 3 hours 3 times over the weekend.
God, that's like playing on the Harbinger.
Yeah. See, I've never had in SWTOR a queue except on launch. I do remember the queues then, but that's the only time.
Roll the tune on the Harbinger.
Yeah. Oh, I am on the Harbinger.
You are?
Yeah. Yep.
3 hours. That's pretty insane wait time.
Yeah. And the, one of the main reasons is when the servers were falling over, what they did was reduce the server populations. So they basically said for those, because, I mean, one of those times I did log in and it was nearly unusable, you know, 20 seconds to loot something and stuff like that. So they reduced the server populations, which obviously impacted the queues. And then last night was installing more hardware, which does appear to have improved performance, but the queues are still ridiculous. So that's the big disappointment. Shame on you, Blizzard. Pathetic effort, all that. Now, as far as the expansion goes, and I'm only about 20% into level 92, so I've done 2 and a bit levels, it's probably the best expansion I've played since, well, I came in after Burning Crusade went live, but, I mean, I enjoyed Burning Crusade immensely. Wrath of Lich King was quite good. Cataclysm, yep. Pandaria, okay. This is brilliant. So the adding of the garrisons is a major boost. The fact they've even used some of the sound animations from Warcraft 1, 2, and 3 doesn't do any harm from a sentimentality viewpoint. But the garrisons are really cool. The way they've implemented it's cool. They've definitely ripped off companions in a big way from Star Wars The Old Republic. I'd argue in some ways they've implemented better than BioWare have. In other ways, not so much. But you have what are called followers. You tend to pick up your followers via quests like Star Wars The Old Republic, but just much simpler quest lines than what SWTOR is. And you send them off on missions and you've got a match ability. So one thing I do like that SWTOR doesn't do, you do match abilities to some extent as far as your companions have their strengths that you might send them off on. But this is a little bit more nuanced in that you have to match battle abilities. And they go off and do their quests and come back half an hour later and they've either won or not and you get loot from it. So it's pretty similar.
Mm.
But yeah, very well. I've only got a level 1 garrison. I've still got a long way to go with that, but very impressed with it. Storyline's good. They've done a whole bunch of really cool things with cutscenes, and particularly in the first component of the story, they've done a real I don't know, it's like an anime approach, just introducing the characters in a bit of a Worldwide Wrestling Federation style, which was quite funny. Just a lot of people saying they're loving it, and I'm one of them when I can get in there. So that's my initial WoW impressions. And for those super keen, I'm actually doing a little article for the ABC this week on 10 years of WoW. There's not a hell of a lot exciting in there for regular WoW players. It's more just a bit of a hat tip to WoW and how it's influenced the industry over so many years.
What will that be on?
That'll be on ABC Technology, so abc.com.au/technology. Once it's live, I'll tweet it out, but I'm not sure when it'll be going live. That'll probably do for WoW. They've just got to sort these server issues, given, you know, Activision, again, it's a massive company. They could have afforded a few more servers.
You mean Blizzard?
Yeah, well, Blizzard are owned by Activision. Am I wrong?
Nope. No, that's right. Activision, Blizzard.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So, go WoW. Still strength to strength. And the other interesting thing is obviously they're already working on the next expansion, which they're hoping to get out within a year. And an even smaller team apparently are working on the expansion after.
Mm.
So they're not going anywhere in a hurry, nor would they with the money they're raking in.
Exactly.
How many subscribers does WoW have these days?
It sits around the 7 million mark. I'd say, assuming they could get these servers working, they'll have their initial bump for the next few months. They'll probably knock it up, I'm guessing, around 8, 8.5, and then it'll probably just slowly decline back to 7 and below, if I was going to guess. So, yeah, but about the 7 million mark, I believe.
It's pretty stable around that point, I think, isn't it, usually?
Yeah. So, you know, they're not doing too bad. It's a lot of subscription fees.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of contenders have come along, obviously, SWTOR, WildStar, which has seen a drop back now. But I think WildStar will end up being very much like Guild Wars 2. Quite a much smaller population than at launch, but a fairly stable
dedicated
one.
Yeah,
because, I mean, you look at Rift, and Rift is still chugging along quite well. So is The Secret World, which recently had
event. Weekend was this weekend, just gone,
Yeah, wish I'd had a chance to jump into that.
I know. I get the emails and look longingly at them, and that's as far as it goes. So that probably covers MMO land. With the 3-week delay, it's even more exciting to bring across ODS1 for his latest segment, Your Lore is Stuck in My Canon. And I believe this week he's going to cover something that, well, they're all interesting, but this should be a particular interest, and that is lightsabers. Over to you, ODS1.
Thank you, Master David. May I say how much we all appreciate your existence. Without people like you, humanity, overall, would be just that little bit better. And thus, statistically speaking, the majority of humans would be just that little bit more worthless. Keep up the good work. Now, there's probably an amusing and scintillating segue I could make from that to our topic today, but it would be wasted on your organic brains. So, let's just cut to the chase, shall we? Lightsabers. Long, throbbing shafts of power, and the source of many bad double and single entendres. While it's unclear if Jedi or Sith made such smutty jokes to each other, the rest of the galaxy most certainly does. But what is a lightsaber, and where did it come from? First, let me clarify what they are not. They are not made of light, although they certainly emit it. Nor are they a saber, which is a single-edged, curved sword designed to slash at opponents from horseback. As they have no specific edge, and in fact can be considered to be all edge, saber is definitely not the right word. But you can debate amongst yourselves what might be a suitable substitute. So, not a saber, and not made of light, but made of plasma. By focusing the... Wait a moment... What do you mean you're not sure what plasma is? Briefly then, plasma is the fourth known state of matter, the other three being gas, solid, and liquid. Plasma can be created by superheating a gas or subjecting it to a strong electromagnetic field. Now, that may sound exotic, but you are seeing light emitted by plasma every time you walk into daylight, look at a neon sign, or even a plasma TV screen. Plasma is not unique to the Jedi or Sith weapons either. Most blasters use some form of plasma, usually as bolts of magnetically contained plasma. So perhaps the difference between blasters and weapons of a more civilized age are less to do with substance than style. But that is enough preamble. Let us discuss some specifics about lightsabers, and to save time, I will simply refer to it as a Jedi weapon, since the Sith are either fallen Jedi or trained in the traditions of fallen Jedi. Lightsabers are remarkable pieces of technology, compact, efficient, and reasonably lightweight. The plasma shaft or blade is emitted and sustained by the hilt. The blade retains its shape through a force containment field created by either naturally occurring or synthetic force-augmented focusing crystals, which also imbue the blade with its color. The power source is usually a diatium power cell located at the base of the hilt by the pommel cap. To the eye, the blade appears to average about 1 meter in length. However, it's actually twice this long, as the projected beam is bent 180 degrees at the end of the blade and feeds back into the hilt. This loop ensures maximum battery life by forming a closed circuit until the blade comes into contact with another object, at which point energy is expended. The hilt itself varies in length, sometimes as short as 23 centimeters, but seldom longer than 30 centimeters, with an average girth of 17 centimeters. Most lightsabers weigh about 1 kilogram. Because of the weight and the gyroscopic effect created by the blade containment field, most wielders use a two-handed grip. The hilt features an actuation switch, plus controls to vary the beam length and power, so you can fine-tune it depending on use. For instance, cutting through a blast door as part of a diplomatic mission, or caramelizing the top of your creme brulee. The hilts are usually constructed by the end user, who, tradition dictates, must also obtain the materials, of which the crystals are the most significant. While a lightsaber only needs a single crystal, the ideal number is 3. The first known antecedent of the lightsaber was created by the glorious Infinite Empire. Referred to in ancient holocrons as a force saber, these powerful but comparatively crude devices were constructed by the Rakata's force hounds, using a specific form of crystal that they shaped by force alchemy. The completed weapon channeled dark side energy through the saber's crystal into a force-constricted beam of energy about the same length as a modern lightsaber. The saber was used almost exclusively by the hounds, while the Rakata used a force pike, which was approximately 2 meters long and featured a single blade at one end that was shorter and thicker than a saber's. The rest of the weapon was fashioned from the force blade-resistant metal Frick. A second blade could be fitted at the free end of the pike, creating something similar to a modern double-sided lightsaber. The force saber was introduced to the planet Tython 12 years after the Despot Wars, when the Hound Zesh crash-landed on the surface after escaping a doomed Rakatan warship sent to seize the planet. A full-scale invasion by the Infinite Empire followed almost immediately in 25,793 BBY as part of their attempt to locate a rumored Infinity Gate left on Tython by the Qua. Even though the Infinite Empire was declining due to the Rakata losing their connection to the Force, they were still massively powerful, with many weapons at their disposal, including the Flesh Raider terror troops, genetically customized, low-caste Rakatans themselves, armed with yellow-bladed Force Sabers. However, Tython was a world with an incredibly rich connection to the Force, one that was neither light nor dark. Originating on Tython, the ancient Jedi Order, from which the Jedi Order would later evolve, maintained equilibrium in the Force through the philosophy of the balance, as symbolized by the planet's two moons, the bright moon Ashla and the dark moon Bogan. Failure to maintain this balance resulted in devastating Force storms. In fact, the arrival of Zesh himself triggered a Force storm that raged across the planet. To prevent their members from edging one way or the other, the Jedi had a solution. Any member who was leaning towards the dark side was sent to Bogan to contemplate the other moon, Ashla, and the light side. Those who were moving too much towards the light side were sent to Ashla to contemplate Bogan and the dark side. Only when they had regained their centre could they return to Tython. The Jedi successfully repelled the Infinite Empire, although descendants of the Flesh Raiders do still exist on Tython to this day as a reminder of those times. So even with the invasion force beaten and scattered, it and the recent Despot War made it clear that they were vulnerable. It also exposed the Jedi to the full power of complete surrender to one side of force perception. While the risks had been well understood by the Jedi, the potential benefits had been ignored. Dark side power and technology were a revelation to some, and an avenue that should no longer be disregarded. For those of you who understand such things, or those of you who at least recognize the inevitable, you will not be shocked to learn that this state of stability was short-lived, and ended the same year as Zesh's arrival, and the same year as the invasion. A schism had opened in the Order's belief system. Those Jedi who were more inclined towards Ashla or the contemplative perception of the Force rapidly rejected what they saw as an alarming trend within those who were inclined towards Bogan or the passionate perception of the Force. The Jedi Order's High Council split in two, and a 10-year conflict began between those wishing to maintain their existing principles and those who wished to remake the Jedi, those who were swayed by Bogan. These dissidents, led by Master Rajaveri, himself a founder of the Jedi Order, attacked those who refused to see the new path and left to create their own stronghold based at the Temple of Knowledge, also known as Keleth. Rajaveri also found allies in some of the scattered remnants of the Rakatan forces, including Flesh Eaters. From there they launched savage attack after savage attack. The ongoing clashes created force storms that tore across the planet. But their resistance failed when Rajaveri mysteriously left and their flesh-eater allies abandoned the cause, leaving only the Jedi dissidents to fight to the death amidst Keleth's battered walls. For the survivors, it was clear that dark side technologies were too dangerous to use, and obviously this included force sabers. However, the idea and some of the technology was not completely useless or abandoned, but adapted into a new form of weapon known as a proto-saber. The primary difference was the power cell. While the darkside-fueled force saber was compact enough to fit into a hilt, the energy cell technology of the time was not so elegant nor so powerful. Instead, the proto-saber was connected by cable to a power cell worn on the wielder's belt. This was heavier and more cumbersome, and the cable tended to get tangled in things, but it worked and served the Jedi well as they abandoned the battered world of Tython and established themselves on Ossus and beyond. It was actually a Sith innovation that the lightsaber we know today appeared when they made several improvements, including a means of feeding the shaft's energy flow back into the energy cell in the hilt, unless the blade cut into or made contact with something, breaking the circuit. This made a much more efficient and portable weapon. The Sith also introduced the use of synthetic lightsaber crystals, or synth crystal. Most synth crystals produce a red blade due to the forging process used by the Sith. They were also easier to augment and often produced a stronger blade than naturally occurring crystals, but there were some downsides, including a loss of maneuverability. While the Jedi eschewed synth crystals, there was nothing inherently dark side about them, and the crystal color could be altered by adjusting the manufacturing technique and the application of the Force during their forging. However, the Jedi preferred naturally occurring crystals, as obtaining them was more difficult. They had to be earned. Synthetic crystals were easier to make, and anything quick and easy was a path to the dark side. So, 2-minute noodles were probably out as well. For the Sith, it was simple practicality. The locations of naturally occurring crystals were well known to Jedi, and obtaining them risked exposing the Sith. To stay hidden, the Sith resorted to creativity and innovation instead. I should also mention, at this time only Sith Lords used lightsabers. Most other Sith traditionally used Sith swords, two-edged blades created and augmented with Force alchemy. This tradition endured until the influx of fallen Jedi and their lightsabers to Exar Kun during the Great Sith War in 3996 BBY. The lightsaber saw even wider use during the Second Sith War,
also known as the Jedi Civil War, which commenced in 3958 BPY and ended 2 years later with the Battle for Rakata Prime and the destruction of the Starforge. During this time, a rapid increase in the use of personal energy shields made blasters much less effective. As such, the tactics began to revolve around melee weapons, which included lightsabers. Conventional swords also came into much more common use and were augmented with cortosis woven into the blades, which didn't make them immune to lightsabers, but it did mean it took several direct strikes to break such weapons. And that is where we find ourselves today, in a world full of electro staffs, techno blades, blasters, and lightsabers of every colour, assuming you can find the right crystal. But the future is mysterious. Who knows? One day, perhaps they will all be gone, reduced to obsolete curiosities of a bygone age. Speaking of obsolete curiosities, back to you, Master David.
Feeling the love, Odious One, feeling the love, and thank you again. So let's jump now into some general gaming news.
This is not the podcast you're looking for.
Simon, PAX Australia, does it already seem like an eternity ago? Because, it's 2 weeks ago now, isn't it?
It does indeed feel like an eternity ago. In fact, I'm hard-pressed to remember anything about it at all, but that's
that should make for an exciting report then.
It's either due to advanced age or drinking. I'm not sure which. Sort of half-truthful kidding aside, what was it like? The last one was good. This one was gooder.
Does it feel like an expo that's starting to find its feet? Because it was very much a finding your feet experience last year.
Yeah, and they definitely acknowledge that on the way in the main concourse. There's a sign that basically said, I think this is what it said. It said, "PAX Oz now with fewer tents," and indeed there were fewer tents, and also the ever present faint but distinct smell of horse poo was also absent. But of course, being a gathering of technology and gaming enthusiasts, there were other smells to compete anyway. So that wasn't really a big deal. As far as the venue went, massive improvement. Obviously, it's right in the center of the city this time, not out at the showground. So public transport, really easy. If you wanted to eat anything, it's right on one of probably the larger restaurant and dining venue strips, certainly in the CBD. I mean, that's just where everyone goes to sort of chill out, sit by the river and drink too many some things and eat some overpriced buffalo wings usually. So as far as food goes, there was no need for a donut lunch as last year.
Oh, the memories.
The memories, yes, indeed. The theatre venues were also a lot better. The absurd queuing that experienced last time. And, I mean, they did their best, and God knows the PAX enforcers deserve a medal because they are just every single one I spoke to or saw, they were always positive, they're always cheerful, and they're always helpful. So really, it's part of the PAX experience, the enforcers, they were really top-notch this time as well. And hopefully they had less to deal with, or at least less challenges to deal with on the spot. The theatre, they were actually proper theatres. It wasn't just some large warehouse with a lot of track seating. So that was, I went to the main one, which was the Wombat, and that was where I saw the BioWare. What was it? Stories You Can Play, I think was what it was called.
Okay.
And that was very interesting. I've got some, I didn't make the recording because I wasn't exactly in an ideal seating position, but someone did. And it's worth a listen to. They had a panel of three people. There was Aidan Scanlon, who's the assistant director of design, Mike Laidlaw, who's the creative director for the whole Dragon Age franchise, because obviously this, like the last talk I went to at PAX, this was about Dragon Age Inquisition. Mark Wilson, who's the lead technical designer, and is actually a lot of laughs, and really worth listening to because they covered a lot of things, the technical aspects of what's required for producing a triple A game on that scale, but also just the journey they went on in where they started from, right back at Baldur's Gate, up to this current iteration, and it's really quite interesting. There's a bit of waffle in there, but for the most part, it's got some really, really useful information, and some of it's quite pertinent to where some AAA games are finding themselves now.
Okay.
Because obviously anyone who follows what's going on is aware that Blizzard's not the only one having difficulties with launches. That was really interesting. I won't waffle on about that too much. What else was there? The stands in the display space was great. The indie games were all up the far end, and they had a massive display up there, just where all of the console gaming and all of that sort of palaver is.
Yeah, the indies got a lot of love this year, I'm told, just the way they situated did. And yeah, which is good.
Yeah, and yes, absolutely, and some pretty impressive products on display too. The main display area obviously has all of the hardware and the big players. So Ninty was there, Xbox was there, and it was considerably more impressive.
Excellent. Although it's not hard to improve on last year.
On an empty cabinet and a backdrop. Yeah, no. I actually went up because I still had the photo on my camera. So I went up and showed one of the guys there, and he's just sort of, really? So, because this, it was actually, I don't know how many units they had there. It must have been about, there must have been about 50 Xboxes.
Okay.
There, and it was quite well organized. They had it set up so the Master Chief, there were two queues. Master Chief Collection, you queued on one side, other side, and they're quite long queues because you've got about 5 minutes on the game. And I think four or six of you, I can't quite recall, got to go on each session. So, but when you got there, you got at least a decent shot at the game. So I tried the Master Chief Collection and Sunset Overdrive, both of which really looked good. Looked good. They played well. The Master Chief Collection is butter smooth. It's
just for the dumbass. Yep. Master Chief Collection is the big Halo collection.
Yeah, Master Chief Collection. That's the anniversary edition of Halo 1.
Yeah.
The new anniversary edition of Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo 4, and every multiplayer map that's ever been released. Right.
The guys on Good Game have fallen in love with it. I saw their review.
Oh, right. Well, it's 100 multiplayer maps, and the whole thing's all sort of synergized through a single interface and a lobby system. So, and you can have playlists, so you can actually go in and do all the missions with warthogs. So it's quite amazing. That, and this is nothing to do with PAX, but since we're just talking about that, since that was released recently, the Halo channel has also come out, which obviously is gives you access to Halo Nightfall, which is the TV series that was made for Xbox Media before they decided that was a bad idea.
Okay.
But that's got Ridley Scott as the executive producer, and the production, they're sort of releasing them one a week, I think, at the moment. So I saw the first one of those last night, and yeah, production values are pretty impressive for what it is, and the story, I think, is going to be quite interesting.
Good. I like to think most things Ridley Scott do tends to be good, although he's had a couple of clangers, but...
Yeah, that's true. And also, of course, for me at least, one of the most significant parts of PAX was the attendance of Robert Space Industries, who, of course, are the the fine people behind Cloud Imperium Games, the makers of Star Citizen. So we had this is taking longer. I'll try and wrap this up quickly. So first of all, special shout out to Dan O'Brien, who was my wingman, I suppose, or I was his wingman. I'm not too sure. In the universe of discovering places to drink beer while waiting for Star Citizen people to show up. So that was good.
Dan, like David, is another very faithful beyond belief listener.
Yes. And a good guy. So I'm just saying the two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive. But that said, so there were several Star Citizen events. There was Chris Roberts gave a talk at PAX on Friday, which I actually didn't attend because I didn't think I'd be able to get into. I was wrong. But we did go to a beer event before that, which was I think it's like 200 people all told, and thought about going and asking questions, getting the pitch taken, but I'll find all that sort of thing actually kind of embarrassing. So I actually spent the time just watching him interact with other people, and I suppose it's not really a big surprise, but he is clearly as enthusiastic about the game as we are.
That's good.
As a player, as a gamer, it's as much for him as it is for everyone else. It's his game, and we're along for the journey with him.
That's what you want. And I don't think it is a fait accompli, that stuff. There is plenty of games where there's just more of a business thing. So I love anyone where the creator's right into it.
Yeah. So that was for me one of the big reassuring things of it, was just actually getting a better sense of the guy, because you read articles or you watch things that they put on YouTube and so on, it doesn't really give you a sense, but to see someone in the flesh and actually interacting with people and talking, and you can just see the enthusiasm and the interest, and you can just see he's into all the details or what's coming up. There wasn't any coming soon TM kind of replies or even PR replies. If you didn't know, he'd tell you. So there was that. And then, of course, on Saturday, there was the big Star Citizen event, which was, again, quite an impressive gathering. Very enthusiastic. Got to meet a lot of other Star Citizens. And, boy, there's a lot. And you start seeing a room full of people who are into the game, and you start seeing how the $50-plus million has been raised.
Yeah. We won't cover it this episode, but we must talk about how that's happened, because it's come out of the blue to me, the whole thing. But obviously, I'm not a great role model for being aware of the wider gaming industry, but it just blows my mind how popular it is.
Yeah, it's a phenomena which I think needs a bit more discussion, certainly a more informed discussion on my part at least. So I'll just wrap this up pretty quickly. Got to see the FPS module, which was actually quite impressive. They had two teams, four machines on each team set up on either side of the stage, and it was all running live. And the reason I know it's running live is one of the clients actually crashed. So, that's fine. I mean, at least you know it's live. It's a pre-alpha build. Having said that, it looks pretty impressive. What they highlighted was zero-G combat, because you have missions where you can go in and just turn the gravity off, which, of course, changes the dynamics considerably. Yeah. So, there are videos on the web for that, but, it wasn't all pre-rendered or it wasn't a tech demo. It was actually running and live. And that's one of the reasons we actually ended up getting in there probably close on half an hour late, was they were just getting things running. And anyone who's seen or heard about any of the Star Citizen demos before know that they will bring the working builds out, and sometimes they will crash. But hey, at least it's real.
That's right. No, good anyway, stuff.
Yeah, so that's it.
That's PAX. And I mean, it was interesting. I just happened to stumble across an ABC News report when PAX was going, and the one cross they did was to the reporter, which was at the no, I think they're in the main hall, but did they have a display there for Star Citizen as well?
Yeah, they had a stand there. There was nothing much in it, but there was one guy who'd actually made a very authentic-looking replica of the spacesuit that gets featured in the hangar module. And it was just some guy who came along and cosplayed. But, yeah, that sort of blew everyone away because a lot of work.
No, good stuff. I'm glad PAX Year 2 was a success, and I'd say I assume they're coming back. I'd be surprised if they weren't.
For the next 5 years.
Yeah,
that's cool. Been confirmed. They'll be in Melbourne. So
nice. I'll hopefully get there next year. All right. Thanks, Simon. Let's jump into a bit more Blizzard stuff. It's been a bit of a Blizzard fest this episode. David, tell us what you know about Overwatch.
One of the guys from work linked me this and had a look at the videos. My take on this is it's an update of Team Fortress 2 with a slight twist of a Borderlands-style graphic. Currently, they've released a cinematic trailer and a in-game footage showing all the different playable classes. Considering that Steam hasn't really done much with Team Fortress 2 except for basically add hats, really, it's actually looking pretty cool. One of the characters I like in there is this robot that can then transform into a Gatling gun, which looks pretty cool. So, and I don't know, just looking at what I've seen so far, they seen each class looks like seems to have like a special move, a big high powered move. So yeah, it looks like it'll be quite interesting. Looks like standard. I think the gameplay trailer had a capture the flag game in it. So yeah.
Yeah, and we'll put them in the show notes. I mean, in a wider context for Blizzard, it was a relatively unexpected announcement, and it doesn't quite compare. There were still some people hoping against hope they're going to announce the next MMO, and it certainly doesn't fit into that, but it's still an interesting one, and if anyone can make that sort of thing work, it should be Blizzard. So, yeah, it'd be fascinating to see.
Well, just on that note, from what I've been able to glean or pick up from here and there, it sounds like one of the reasons why it was unexpected is because this is actually part of what would have been Titan.
Yeah.
What they seem to have done is grabbed a few bits that were working, that they were happy with, and roll it into a game. I suppose it's a game. It's part of a game.
Yeah. I mean, and there was, I believe since BlizzCon, there's been an announcement about, or not an announcement, but there's a little bit more info about what Titan was going to be. And it was going to be a near future sci-fi sort of thing, but not space-based is my best understanding of what I've read. Yeah.
Well, the when you're just schlepping about doing your job, yes. But it sounds like everything's kind of flipped around when you went into your alter ego.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So... Yeah, and David, what's the did they actually give a commitment to a release date?
No, stuff I've seen, I haven't noticed a release date yet.
I didn't think so either.
Don't know. Have you noticed anything, Simon?
Not that I was able to pick up, no. But I have to admit, it's not something I've got a lot of shooty on my plate at the moment. I didn't really need another one, so I haven't really looked at it too hard.
Yeah. All right. And while you're at it, David, talk a little bit about Eve's new release format.
I've only come in since they've started this. The game's been going now for 10, 11 years, and what they used to do is have two releases every year. So every 6 months they'd have their release. When things weren't ready, unfortunately, they normally were held over to the next release. They've now changed it over to a six-week release schedule, sort of like what we have on SWTOR. And to be quite honest, it's quite fun. Like every 6 weeks, we start getting the dev blogs about 2 to 3 weeks before the next patch of all the goodies coming out. And it seems from hearing a few people talk about it, they've been playing it a lot longer than I have. It's brought a bit of hope back into the game and all of that. Like, things are being changed up a lot sooner. And, yeah, it's just every after the – I've been finding that after the latest release, I'm always looking forward to hearing all the dev blocks about – dev blogs about what's coming out in the next release. So, no, it's been quite interesting.
Yeah, I think the days of these infrequent releases for any MMO are dead because – there's just so much to capture everyone's attention now. They've got to keep your interest.
At least one good thing is that now, as well, with being the 6 weeks period, if they're saying that they can't get out, say, like, for instance, the next release that we've got coming up on the 3rd of December is, 9th of December is Rhea. If something doesn't make out for that, it's only another 6 weeks until it can maybe be put into the next patch.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, and talk about one patch thing. One thing I hate with playing EVE and SWTOR, they always seem to have the bloody major patches on the same times every Tuesday. So, like, normally what I do is if one's patching, I'll go and play the other one. But, yeah, lately, for all the releases that EVE have been having, it's also been a release where SWTOR have brought out the next 2.2 dot whatever. And I tell you, that's bloody frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad enough because, I mean, Blizzard and BioWare already bloody sync up with that stuff most of the time as well, so it's a pain in the ass.
There's something to be said for locally stored games, like TIE Fighter.
Yes, go TIE Fighter.
Doesn't matter if the internet goes down, as long as the power's running, I can still play my game.
That's right, agreed.
So they've released some of the other X-Wing games as well as TIE Fighter, from memory?
Yeah, there was a bit
or
of
is
a...
Or just TIE Fighter? I saw TIE Fighter and I thought...
I'd have to check on the website. I must admit, I saw it and I thought, oh, because I've still got the installed disc for TIE Fighter, but I just couldn't be bothered trying to get load up DOSBox and get everything working. I thought, it's enough to know that I've got it.
That's right.
That's fine. So, what is it? Good old games. Good old games. GOG.com. That's where I bought it from. That's where there's an amazing number of venerable games and some fairly recent ones.
So what was that? GOG.com. I'll have to check that out later.
I would definitely recommend you go and have a look because you'll find some, especially if you're of a certain age, you will find, well, actually any age, you will find games from the ancient past that you probably wouldn't mind having another crack at.
Oh, God, I'll be so checking that out.
Like Duke Nukem 3D.
Oh.
or let's see what else I've got here. Unreal Tournament 2004. God, I lost so much time to that game.
They got Hexen? Maybe not because it's ID software. Anyway.
They've got the Privateer, Wing Commander 1 and 2 and 3. Less Wing Commander 1 and 2, $3.49 Australian.
Nice.
There is a lot. So, yeah, go and have a look.
You will, AAA games of their time.
And yes.
Speaking of AAA games, well, I thought we might have a bit of a discussion about what the hell's going on with AAA games in that I've already talked about WoW and its performance issues. It, as you mentioned, it's not the only one, Simon, that's had a lot of performance issues lately. Interested in your thoughts. I know you've mentioned Drive Club, Assassin's Creed and Destiny in particular.
Drive Club, for anyone who doesn't know, is a launch title for the PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
That's still not out, but at least not properly. They have been having ongoing issues with their servers. A lot of problems seem to stem from servers. The Master Chief Collection was having some difficulties with servers. I don't really, as long as you don't mind that so much because it's kind of expected if it's fixed in 2 or 3 days, which most of these things usually are. Drive Club's now in their sixth week of these shenanigans. So much so that they're actually giving away two DLC packs that were originally originally charging money for, just as a way of saying sorry. I don't know whether it's going to appease a lot of fans, but time will tell. But that's, of course, not the one that's had the most problems. Probably the one that's gotten the most bad rep lately has been Assassin's Creed Unity, which has had some bizarre, absolutely bizarre render issues. And if you jump online, you'll be able to see blooper reels of this sort of stuff. Passionate kisses. Not so hot when one of the characters has no head. Except for the hair, two free-floating eyeballs, and some teeth and a tongue.
That's gold.
It's ghastly. Total Biscuit has done a video that's worth having a look at as well. Just with some of – there are some weird things going on. It's – the game's not broken per se, but it's got a number of issues with its render engine. And a lot of it, I think, stems from the whole issue with – and it's one of the big selling points – was just the sheer number of characters they're going to have roaming around revolutionary Paris. And it, when it's working fine, it's actually quite impressive when they're not clipping through buildings, clipping through each other, or walking along, except they're actually horizontal and walking.
You can't even understand how anyway.
And there's a whole bunch of other render issues. Ubisoft have been doing a wonderful job of making themselves worse than cancer recently, just through some of the stupid things they've been saying, and they just don't seem to stop. And the thing that had the biggest hue and cry was the whole business about running at 900p 30 frames a second or something along those lines. Basically, the pretty much for a next gen console and PC, which it seems to be equally limited, was the bare minimum. And they were talking about, oh, well, we didn't want people to argue about which was best, so we decided on a fixed deliverable for all platforms. No, that's obviously bullshit. What they did – well, yes, no, that is actually true. What they've done is they've taken that because they knew that it wasn't going to run properly if they tried to bump it up. It's not running properly now.
That's right.
So if it had been running at a higher FPS – or high resolution, it probably just would have – it wouldn't have run at all.
Fallen over, yeah.
Yeah.
And it only released – because, I mean, when I went in to pick up WoW on Thursday, it was busy as anything, not because of WoW, but because of people picking up collector's editions of Assassin's Creed Unity. So it was only released this past week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a mess. Ubisoft have made a real mess of it. Considering their developers were coming out there and making a lot of weak-assed pseudo-technical justifications for this, that, and the other, what they've ended up releasing is a game that's, as I say, not broken. When it's running properly, it looks quite beautiful. But there's enough bits and pieces where things are just glitching out that pulls you right out of the moment.
Yeah, it's unforgivable.
It is when you consider how much you pay for one of these things.
So now would be a good time to have Ed join us and give his comments on Ubisoft. Would that be a good time?
Ubisoft are worse than EA. They're worse than Activision.
Yeah.
They are definitely in that category now, and it's not because of this game, but just the some of the bizarre attitudes they have exhibited towards this title and a number of others. And just that the developers don't seem to I never thought I'd say this, but Ubisoft need to get their PR people to pull these people in check.
Mm.
Assuming, of course, that it's not the PR people that are getting them to say these things, in which case the PR people just need to be shot in the face.
Right. Well, maybe there's been a bit of that, which is why there's people kissing just eyeballs and tongues.
Yeah, eyeball love.
Teeth. That
yes. Yes, the teeth, they had some problems.
The teeth in there, they look like, you know how you get those funny teeth that jump around and all of that and like bite? That's basically looks like what they've used as the model for the teeth, because one of the photos, yeah, you can see the underside of the hair looks like basically the roots of the hair. Then these eyeballs, which also looks like they got like, these are kind of accurate. It looks like they got bloodshot, so you can see like little veins. And then there's these like bloody crazy teeth hanging there.
Yeah, which makes it all the more seductive, really.
Absolutely. Well, for a small niche, it probably is more seductive.
Sadly,
but
and the other thing, I'm just going to bring up briefly, Destiny.
Yeah.
The game it should have been, as opposed to the game that we got. There was a Reddit post that's gone now, but.
Gone now.
Oh, sorry about that. I've just got music playing in my. Must be an ad on this bloody website. Sorry.
That's all right. My internet had dropped again.
I thought it might have been the music from, because I have a shameful admission to make while you're fixing that up, in that I have coming through my headphones not only you guys, but the WoW launch screen music, because the queues are so long. I've logged into the queue so that by the time I finish and edit the podcast, and you can't turn the music off until you're logged in. So I've got to put up with the WoW music in my ear.
Yeah, IGN playing a commercial at me. It threw me. I thought, can they hear this?
No, it's all good.
Right.
Because at least if you're running Windows, you can actually go in and mute certain programs and turn the sound down.
It's a good point. See, Gail will love you.
especially if you say how that Call of Duty Advanced Warfare looks better than
Secret
Destiny.
World.
And Secret World.
yeah, that's right.
It does look better than Destiny, I think.
I probably would.
Running full graphics, it does.
Well, if you're using a PC, I'm not actually sure. I've been looking at some screen comparisons, and in all honesty, I mean the Xbox One version looks like it's pulling the old Crush Blacks trick, but I can't really see a lot of difference between the. There is a difference, but I can't see a massive difference between the PlayStation 4 and the PC version. Possibly because it's been gimped. The PC version's been gimped, so it doesn't look too out of line with the consoles.
Yeah, I got it on PC, so I can't comment on the PlayStation. But some of the areas look a bit nicer than Destiny. Some don't.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure that's probably the truth. In all honesty, the eye candy tends to fade after the 300 millionth time that you've gone and stared at the same rusty wall.
In
Destiny, yes.
The lack of story is the big issue there.
Yeah, and there was a Reddit post that's been pulled subsequently, but from someone who claimed that they were in one of the early test sessions, and now the game is released, they didn't think their NDA still applied. I don't know if that's actually true. I think the NDA probably still does apply. But anyway, the plot that is sketched out, or at least the elements of it, the sad thing is it all sounds quite plausible. And when you think about the untidy state that Destiny is in a narrative sense, I mean, combat's great, the look of the thing is great, but narrative, no. Especially when you consider that for all of the grimoire cards that you end up unlocking as you're going through, you don't get to read the grimoire cards in game. There's no UI for it because they didn't have the time to develop the UI for it because these changes were made too late in the day.
This is how sad I am. I've wondered what those grimoire cards are for. So it's actually the lore behind the game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you're looking for story and background and the exposition that you probably should have received in a more interesting way before a lot of these things got pulled or changed, if you're interested in that, just go to the Bungie.net website and you can read all of the information about your game on a website.
Yeah. Very 1997.
Well, I mean, at least World of Warcraft had the courtesy of releasing some books.
Yeah.
For this sort of stuff, it just screams of hasty, sloppy. is really what it comes down to. So that's why I cancelled my Activision pre-order for Advanced Warfare. I'm not buying any Activision games until I get a sense that I'm not being completely ass raped with this.
Yeah, fair enough too.
The sad thing is, I'd actually prefer to buy. I might get the game, but I'll get a pre-owned copy, which means that EB Games gets
some money, but not
the money, but not Activision. Activision won't get shit out of that transaction, and that's fine because EB Games and their pre-orders and collector's editions and all of the other crap they try and sting you with and charging more than JB until you actually raise it with them so they drop their price to match it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying they're the good guys here, but at least they employed local people. I mean, what the hell's Activision doing apart from giving us – and like I say, Ubisoft and EA are just as bad. But apart from shortchanging us and treating us like idiots – I don't know what's going on because clearly they must have pulled this stuff so they can release it as DLC. I mean, most of the DLC is already on the disc that we bought anyway. We just can't get to it. And there's the argument that, oh, well, most of the major assets are there, but they're not complete, blah, blah, blah. Bullshit on that.
I agree.
There may be some small element of truth to that, but don't give me that crap. I wasn't born yesterday.
No, that's the thing.
I'm a little irritated by it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've well and truly covered general gaming. Just an extremely brief point for those of you that do own a PS4, this month's games are pretty bloody good. Escape Plan, I'm in love with. So it's, I don't know whether Simon, you have debt, but it's, yeah, Escape Plan's a lovely, lovely game.
No, I haven't.
It's about 4.6 gigs, which is a pain in the ass, but it's a great game. Think of Angry Birds with a black and white tinge, and it's just a puzzle-based game. We've got to get these two characters through this prison. It's really cool.
Oh, you mean like D4? That's a puzzle-based game, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, Dark Dreams Don't... Dirk Diddler Does Dallas. I don't know. It stands for something.
Yeah, I love that. I think you might have found the episode name.
Oh, God.
Right, let's go jump out of gaming now, finally, and jump across to pop culture.
I can feel your anger growing.
All right, the obvious elephant in the room in pop culture is the Star Wars movies, with the announcement since we last broadcast that they've come up with the name, the very, very exciting, The Force Awakens. So without bogging it down for half an hour, although I think we're probably going to be all in agreeance, starting with you this time, David, what's your take on the title? Bit boring, bit predictable, could have done better.
Just like, where's it awakened from? Yeah. Wasn't it already there? So how can it go to sleep? So, but then when you look at some of the extended canon stuff, or the stuff that was around before is now all canon. So I guess in theory, none of that stuff in the future existed. So the Force could have gone to sleep and now it's coming back.
But you can also look at it from an English and grammar viewpoint. It's not that the Force hasn't been there and come back. It's just that the Force that we understand from the first six movies is a minor shadow of itself, and that it fully awakens and becomes even bigger.
I guess, yeah, valid point. Never thought of it that way.
I hadn't until 30 seconds ago, but that's just what occurred to me.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, like I say, with what people have said, how much J.J. Abrams keeps stuff to himself about the storyline. It's going to be interesting when we start hearing some of that coming out to see sort of what it's all about. I guess the first thing is the trailers. When will we start to see some trailers coming out? So that'll be quite sort of looking forward to when that happens. And
we should have a guess.
It should be coming out? I think, was it December 18th, 2015?
Yep. Do you reckon they'll do a trailer a year before? I'd love to think they would, but I reckon March, April will be the first time we'll see a trailer.
Might just have your small teaser trailer, say your 30-second, 15-second trailer, just showing a few images of stuff in the movie and that.
Yeah. Simon, title. I mean, I think I said to you when we attempted to record last week that I find all the titles for the Star Wars movies have been pretty shit, so this is just one in a long line.
Star Wars, My Dick Awakens. I don't like it. I don't like it. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, at least The Force Unleashed made some sort of sense because unleashed in the form of a conduit. Awakens implies that the energy field that runs through everything and binds the galaxy together, blah, blah, blah. It was in some dormant state.
Yeah.
It's not in a dormant state. It is what it is. It's whether there's a conduit to manipulate it is a totally separate. I mean, the conduit can awaken, the Force can't awaken. The Force is what it is. It's what it always has been. It's what it always will be. So it's either it's a clever play on words or something, or someone just doesn't know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, well, it could be that too. And I mean, will the next one be The Force Takes a Nap? Like it's woken up, done a bit of stuff, and then needs another nap. It's just, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Who wrote this one? Was it Lucas again that wrote this? I can't remember. Or was it Abrams with someone?
No one let Lucas near it, did they?
Oh, I should hope not. I mean, he can't write. We all know this now. Star Wars. Let's have a look. This is live.
Yeah, what else would you want? And there'll be at least three people screaming, it's J.R.R. Tolkien or someone.
I must admit, sometimes.
Oh, no, it's okay. Lawrence Kasdan or whatever is written this one, hasn't he?
Yeah, Lawrence Kasdan, J.J. Abrams and George Lucas. I can only assume that George is there just as to guide in general terms.
Good.
So
I actually knew the answer to something. I reckon in 89 episodes, that's the first time ever.
And it's quite impressive.
Yeah.
Got to be right sometime.
Hey, that's right.
Statistics.
All right, so there you go, written by Kasdan. So none of us particularly like the title, and yeah, hanging out for a trailer like everyone else. And I'd love a 1 year out trailer, but it'd show you so little anyway. It'd be just frustrating.
Maybe they can have as many trailers as Assassin's Creed Unity had. I last count, I think it was somewhere around 21.
God.
Yeah.
Well, 21 between now, that'd be one every, 3 weeks roughly. That'd be quite good.
Yeah.
For Star Wars. All right.
Yeah. And they just need to slap a review embargo that ends after the game's released. And, that's worked for Ubisoft. So there's that.
You start to sound like Ed.
Oh.
Excavated Atari cartridges get $1,500 plus at auction. See, that doesn't surprise me, but I haven't read that story. So tell me about it, Simon.
It's a story from Joystick, and basically as most of you will remember, and Xbox owners will be looking forward to a documentary about the search and the excavation of these. Sorry, what's the word I'm looking for? Pieces of crap, that'll do. I think New Mexico is where they found them, in a landfill. So some of them have been put on eBay, big shock there, and the top grossing auction pulled in $1,537 for a mangled, and this is a quote, a mangled sort of boxed copy of E.T. for the Atari 2600. So a total of 90.
They don't even know they're working.
Well, because just put it in you could test it by putting it in the 2600 you got under your TV.
Well, the guys that are the bidding $1,500 literally would have that. But yeah,
no one's going to play them. It's the worst game ever. Even after Assassin's Creed Unity. We'll keep folding that in. A total of 9 ET cartridges sold for more than $1,000 a piece, with copies of Asteroid, Centipede, Missile Command, and others pulling in hundreds of dollars each in additional auctions.
So, what was the one that was $1,500?
That's ET the Extraterrestrial.
Oh, yeah, God, I've only seen screenshots of it, and even that was enough to go, yeah, that wouldn't be fun.
Yeah, I mean, no. No, horrible.
But I guarantee it's probably less common. That'd be just down to a supply issue that it got the bigger bids.
Yeah, it'd be the rarity and as a talking point and just the curiosity. I mean, let's face it, if just going back to PAX for a moment, if you didn't walk out with at least a bit of swag, you weren't doing it right.
No, that's right.
We love our stuff.
Could you also be paying for the tip smell as well?
Mexican tip smell.
I'm not actually sure if it was in a landfill, a municipal landfill. I think basically they just went out into the desert, dug a big hole, and then just threw thousands of black plastic bags filled with. Because there's not just a. I'm just looking at the photo here. There are squashed copies of boxes of Centipede and a bunch of other games. So it just looks like most of it's Atari ET. But it looks like there's other stuff that they just couldn't sell or didn't want that went in there as well. But there's a lot of it.
Lucky bugger that found it.
Mm.
All right. I believe that might be pop culture. Yes, it is. So what will be a very short general technology roundup.
It does have its moments. Not many, but it has them.
Simon, a little birdie tells me you might be shopping for a new monitor. Why?
Who told you that?
The running sheet that you typed in.
Oh. Bit of a giveaway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, yes. Now, there are some out there, some technical magicians who have managed to build themselves computers that can have multiple monitors running off them, you know, like three.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, I don't know, someone like Redner, for instance, who might have something like this. And it's all very impressive, but I can't afford the machine, quite frankly, to do that. So I have been recently very interested in a recent advent, it's fairly recent, I think, of the ultra-wide monitor. So this is something which runs at, I should probably have gotten the bloody resolution, shouldn't I? Basically, it's a 21:9 ratio monitor. And you can get them like 29 or 34-inch variations. But, I'm just thinking in the games like SWTOR, it's good because you just have a much wider field of vision thing. Yeah, and SWTOR can run a 21:9 monitor, I've checked. But you imagine doing your space combat or GSF in that. Just having your peripheral vision take in that much extra real estate. And also, of course, for Star Citizen, which I have to admit is one of the things that got me looking, because I thought, multiple monitors for something like that. So, you know, because I'm not going to be able to afford an Oculus Rift when it comes out anyway. But widescreen monitor, yeah. So, yes. But for anyone who is thinking about multiple monitors or can't afford multiple monitors or doesn't have the space for it or just doesn't want a bezel running through the screen or your effective viewing area, have a look.
Jump
online and have a look, because it's also you don't have multiple power supplies. You don't have all the extra cords. It's all just running the one device.
I like it. And very briefly, I assume you would have mentioned in your PAX report, I assume you didn't get to have a look at the latest revision of the Oculus Rift.
The queue was extensive and it was only the DK2.
Fair enough.
I mean, we both tried the DK1. We know what that was like.
Yeah.
And I know the DK2 still has the screen door effect.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm here for one day. There's a lot of other stuff I can see and get overstimulated by.
That's right.
So I left that.
Cool. Well, I'm going to call it a show. David, as our very special guest, anything you wanted to add before we jump out? Ooh, he's gone.
Oops, sorry.
No, mute. That's right.
Unmute. Just going to say a quick word about the EVE convention that the Australian community is organising next week in Sydney. Starts Friday night and goes until Sunday. CCP have sent over 3 developers from Iceland to the event, so yeah, that was pretty good on their behalf, what they've managed to get. Website's evedownunder.com, all one word. I think from memory they've still got some tickets on for sale. So, yeah, if there's any listeners out there that like Eve and are in Sydney and haven't heard of it before, check it out.
Brilliant. And I've just got to tell you all something funny. As I said, I had the WoW music running in because I was logging in the queue. I've just gotten in and to see the message, server restart in 6 minutes.
I thought you must have got in because Simon started going all tinny.
Yeah. So that was a total waste of time. But anyway, oh, that just sums up my weekend.
Irony.
Yeah, irony. All right, so we will call it there. Thank you again, wonderful listeners, for listening to us. We do appreciate it, particularly after a week's delay. As always, if you'd like to offer an opinion, suggestion, or some general abuse, please do feel free to email us at contact@oceanicgamer.com or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheOceanicGamer. You can, as always, follow us on Twitter. My handle is at the Oceanic Gamer, and Simon tweets under RPGBeatsRL. And David, did you want to give away out your Twitter handle? I know it, but I should ask whether you want to give it out.
Yeah, that's fine. If so, you have it, or
yeah, well, mine's, it's pretty easy. CASMAS.
Yep, Casmas underscore.
Oh, I didn't notice the underscore on the end. See, that shows you how conservative I am.
Couldn't get just Casmas. I'd add an underscore.
There you go. You'll find previous episodes of the show on iTunes, although it might have been you, David, mentioned that if you're looking for the old episodes, you'll have to go direct via the website because the way iTunes works, you won't even get on the website. It'll only allow the last 50 episodes before iTunes really starts to struggle with the feed. So you can get up back to issue 39 or episode 39.
Yeah, I think I started around the 20s.
See, I'm impressed.
Yes, as I said before, I listened to the ads. I've been through the ads, Mark, Chris's, and now Simon's and yourself.
Oh, and I'm very pleased to report Mark is now my new guild master. So I've just changed guilds in WoW, and it's lovely. And Mark, we're hoping to have on in either next episode. He's been moving house, but we are going to get him on at some stage. So yeah, we're on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher. So yes, thanks very much for listening. Thank you, David. Very much appreciate you dropping in.
Thank you for the invite.
And Simon, as always, appreciate everything you do. Plus some. Particularly naming the episodes.
Oh.
Because what'd you say, Dirk Diddler? See, there's Dirk Diggler from Boogie Nights, but I like Dirk Diddler better.
Is it Diggler?
Yeah, D-I-G-G-L-E-R. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Boogie Nights is Dirk Diggler.
I think Diddler's much better.
Oh, it is. I agree.
It's more suggestive of masturbation.
That's right.
So can I continue along those methods for a second? When you said in regards to your Dickagonus sort of awakened, does that mean that it's going to explode out sometime soon or something?
That'll be the next movie.
Oops, that's just Joe's got to put in the thing about for Joe's daughter.
Ah, of course, yes.
His name's Larry, not Joe. Sorry, that's been an ongoing joke on Twitter the last week. Hello, Joe, and I haven't formally apologised for forgetting your name, so it'll never be forgotten again.
And you still haven't? Was that an apology?
Yeah, sort of.
I
didn't think I needed to, but once the death threat started, I realised that he wanted an apology. So sorry, Joe. All right, so have a great week. And remember, if your pug wipes, it's probably because one of us was in it, or at least Simon and I. Good night.
Bye.
See ya.
Podcast or the person that listens to it.